You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
The latest installment of our ongoing series, Globivores, is all about squash. Joining us now are Bill Telepan, chef and owner of the restaurant Telepan, and Amy Goldman, author of The Complete Squash. I'm very pleased to welcome both of them to our program. You can, by the way, submit your pumpkin or any other kind of squash recipe on our show page at WNYC.org. And Bill, we have posted a number of your recipes on our show page, including a very straightforward squash soup, which uses just a couple of ingredients. Is that because squash already has so many complex flavors?
Yeah, and I also wanted, you know, people like to tend to add a lot of spices to it, and I just think that you lose the real flavor of the soup when you put all that stuff into it. So this you can add, like you could, you know, just sprinkle a little spice on it if you like. You could add any kind of like duck or something to it. But it's really wonderful on its own because some squash, a lot of them, like a kabocha squash or a buttercup squash instead of a butternut. This one, I think, calls for a butternut, but you can add the same amount. And those are just much drier and much more flavorful squash.
Amy, how much variety is there in the squash species?
Well, there's huge variety, and by the way, I totally agree with Bill on that because, you know, those varieties, the buttercup, which is American through and through, was the progenitor of the kabocha.
But not to be confused with the butternut? Not to be confused with the butternut?
Correct. The buttercup is a round squash that was developed in America out of native varieties, but the flesh is starchy, dry, thick, flaky, floury, and, you know, makes a very fine soup.
And they're wonderful for, those are the best ones to use for stuffings, for pastas, because you don't have all that water. So you could add a little, like, mascarpone cheese or something to that.
Now, squash is one of those words where we don't add an S at the end for the plural. Squash is both singular and plural.
Well, I don't quibble about it, you know.
People say squashes.
Squashes, you know. You know, a lot of people don't know exactly what a squash is and how to differentiate it from a pumpkin, but, you know, squashes are, you know, New World genus with five domesticated species. They're all edible members of cucurbita, and pumpkins are just the round-fruited edible sorts.
Now, don't they have unisexual flowers? What does that mean?
Well, no, they have both male and female flowers, and cross-pollination by bees is what needs to happen, or else by people like me who are hand-pollinating.
Now, Bill, there.
How do you hand-pollinate, Amy? That's amazing. How are you, Amy?
Well, that's a long story, and it's all in my book.
Okay.
But it's very interesting. One of my greatest
pleasures
in life.
Will the FCC allow us to do that? Now, Bill, there's winter squash and summer squash. Are they used in different ways?
Well, summer squash it's much more tender, and you can eat it raw. I mean, you can eat winter squash raw, but summer squash you could just sort of shave and put it into salads. And the summer squash also has much more water content and really a lot less flavor. You need to add things to it. Like, it's great to put in a pasta with some Parmesan cheese or herbs like basil or mint. It really needs a lot of help. You're not going to really make a soup out of summer squash, even though people do. But again, you're going to add a lot to that.
Now, Amy, you said pumpkins or squash. Aren't pumpkins squash?
Yeah, they are. They're just, you know, and not all pumpkins are orange either. They're just round, fruited, edible members of the cucurbita genus. So, you know, the pumpkins of North America are the, you know, sort of groovy and shallow pumpkins, the pie and field pumpkins we commonly see now. They're also sort of much more ridge pumpkins from Mexico. But those sorts that belong to the species Pipo originated in North America and Mexico.
And where does the name squash come from? Isn't it from a Native American word?
It is. A scuta squash or something like, I don't know how to pronounce it.
That the Narragansett Indians called it.
So, yeah.
But where did it grow naturally? All throughout North America?
North America and South America. So yes, it's a New World genus, but there, you know, for example, the Pipo squashes, that species, all originated in North America and Mexico. So we're talking, you know, the pumpkins. the acorns, the scallops, and the pumpkins were all domesticated by Native Americans from primitive indigenous sorts. Then the squashes, Bill was just talking about the Maxima squashes with a starchy, flaky, you know, flesh, originated in South America, probably in Argentina, Bolivia, or Uruguay. And the Argyrosperma squashes, the Kushaw squashes that are cultivated for their seeds, which are really big and delicious, came from Mexico.
But I get the feeling they hybridize easily, and that's why we have such variety. Bill, I've heard that some people prefer to use other kinds of squash in pumpkin pie rather than pumpkins.
Right.
Are there certain ones that lend themselves to making a good so-called pumpkin pie?
Well, like the kibbachi Amy was talking about is just a really wonderful, really highly flavorful squash. When we do the soup at the restaurant, we mix in a delicata squash, which is kind of also known as a sweet potato squash because it really resembles sweet potatoes. The kibbacha and some butternut. But there's also one called the sweet dumpling, but it doesn't have too much of a flesh inside of it. But those are great for like roasting into pieces, like with the skin on. And what I've discovered over the last couple of years, like a delicata, the carnival, and something called the sugar dumpling or sweet dumpling. Mm-hmm. Am I right, Amy?
You're talking about fall squashes.
Yeah, those are all really, the skins are edible also. We do this with a Jack B. Little pumpkin, which is the baby pumpkins. We do we've done a steam pumpkin pudding inside it with pumpkin flesh and also squash flesh, and you're able to eat the entire pumpkin.
Now, how many of those, Amy, are we seeing in the farmers markets these days?
Well, I would say most of those are now readily available, which thrills me to pieces because it wasn't always that way. So now a lot of squashes and the ornamental gourds of this family, you know, are in the market. They're, you know, used in fall home decorating, and so they're not just used for cookery.
Yeah, I have them scattered around the restaurant.
They're beautiful. This is their season.
Now, Estelle, one of our listeners, published a recipe on our show page for pumpkin empanadas.
Mm.
We also have a recipe, Bill, for your butternut squash gnocchi. How much buttercup squash?
It's buttercup, yeah.
How much buttercup squash do you incorporate into it to make the gnocchi taste like squash?
Well, you basically take you're replacing a dry squash like the buttercup or a kibbacha with the potato. So there's no potato in the dish. It's just you take the squash, you mix it with the egg, a little cheese, and you just roll it out like gnocchi. You make it like gnocchi. So it's really flavor, really great color also. And you could treat it like you would eat a pumpkin ravioli. So a lot of mushrooms are great with it. A lot of nuts are good with it. Good Parmesan cheese, sage is, you know, just sort of classic and really delicious with it.
Amy, do we know how the people of the Americas ate squash?
Well, I can tell you one thing about acorn squashes. Native Americans of North America, of the East Coast, just simply threw them in the fire and left it at that.
Yeah.
So I think it's like one of the absolute best ways to do it.
Sounds delicious.
You know, nowadays, like in Israel, for example, they're taking acorn squashes and microwaving them, and they've developed new varieties such as the table sugar, which is incredibly high in sugar and very chestnut-like in flavor.
When they were brought to Europe, how were they received?
I think they were received pretty well, and then they've even become, you know, they're widely adapted. Many cultures worldwide have adapted them.
Because we've heard about the resistance to other things. It took a while for potatoes to catch on, tomatoes especially. And peppers to some degree as well. But squash, people understood right away?
They did. I mean, I'm thinking, for example, like Australia. And there's sort of a blue zone around the world at the latitude of Australia and South Africa where pumpkins of the Maxima type grow really well. And, you know, Australia is kind of a meat and potatoes place. So Sunday dinner is still like a joint of mutton or lamb with, you know, roasted with pumpkin and or potato, you know, and they, you know, Bill was talking about some pastry, I believe, or but there's the pumpkin pastry is common in France, in Italy. There's a wonderful squash there called Marina di Chioggia, which is a bump rinded squash that's quite gorgeous, with wall to wall orange flesh inside, and it's kind of very locally adapted to Venice, and it's just born to be gnocchi. So,
is that because they're largely carbohydrate?
Yeah, they're just, they're good carbs.
Uh-huh. Well, what about the squash blossoms? Do you use squash blossoms?
We use mostly the summer ones, and because it doesn't seem like, or at least in my case, I haven't seen a lot of the pumpkin or squash blossoms from the winter squashes. They're not really sold. Mm. There's one place that has them, and I've had them a couple of years ago.
Yeah, there seems to be a season. What about zucchini blossoms? Are zucchini squash?
Oh, absolutely. It belongs to the Pipo genus of species of squash, and it was basically developed in Italy about 1901. So, yeah, the thing of why you don't see blossoms from winter squashes or pumpkins is because those plants are so huge and they produce few blossoms compared to the bush type of, right. You know, summer squash, so which produce them in abundance.
And why do they grow so big? They're a contest for the largest pumpkin, and they go to hundreds of pounds.
Well, now they've just broken the world record, I think, in Rhode Island earlier this season, breaking the 2,000-pound barrier.
Oh, boy.
You know, it's the largest fruit on earth. I mean, it's kind of like the new fat lady in the circus.
How do they move that?
And it's a male thing, the competitive thing. I have to say, I've never grown a pumpkin more than a few hundred pounds.
Well, we have a caller, Julie, who says she's grown a giant squash. Hi, Julie.
Hi. Actually, it was my parents' neighbor in Little Neck, Queens, grew a kabocha squash, which must be about 2.5 by 2.5 feet at least. It's like, I'm not sure I don't think I could get it into my oven without cutting it up. My parents gave it to me as a gift, and I want to know, should I try to cook it, or is it going to be flavorless because it's so big?
Well, I personally never heard of a kabocha squash of that size, but if you have it, wow. There's only one way to find out, is to cut it open and check it out. Kabochas, you know, have virtually fiberless flesh, so they're not stringy and they're very dense.
Do you have to eat them right away after you pick them, or can they sit for a while?
Well, you want, after you pick them, or, you know, after you harvest them, you want them to sit for about a month because they improve in storage, actually, before you cook them. Mm-hmm. And if they're well cured and stored, they'll last for months uncut.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So there's still an opportunity to eat this huge squash, Julie.
I was thinking we're having a vegetarian Thanksgiving, so I was going to either use it as a centerpiece or cook it and serve it. I hadn't quite decided.
What I do with pumpkins or squashes that are sort of on the decline, I make puree and freeze it. And so then you have homemade puree, which can form the basis of soups and gnocchis and pies and more. And it's better than store-bought.
And can't you do that with pumpkin as well?
All of them, yeah.
Yeah,
you could roast off and cook ahead of time. I do that a lot with beans. When I get fresh beans, I'll either, I mean, those you can freeze directly, but I'll cook them ahead of time so I have them ready for, like, I make a little bean salad for my daughter's lunch or something for a pasta.
And so if you want to make a whole bunch of pumpkin pies, you just pull the pumpkin out of the freezer.
And you could even weigh out a specific amount and bag it that way. So this way, you know, like, hey, I know this is a 2-pound pack, and I'm ready to go.
Now, pumpkins, of course, also give us those wonderful seeds, which are usually popular after Halloween. Are seeds of other squash also edible if you prepare them the same way as pumpkin seeds?
Yes, absolutely. All seeds of any members of the Cucurbita genus are edible, but you know, if you take seeds out of ornamental gourds of this group, they may have some bitter compounds on them. You just need to wash it off.
Yeah. And they're really easy.
But they're just nutritious and delicious. They're small, yeah. However.
And so easy to do. It's you wash after you wash them, just put them on a tray, 300-degree oven for 20 minutes, pull them out, and then you could add spices or salt to it, and then put it in for another 10 to 20 minutes, depending on how dark you want them.
So you don't put olive oil on them as
no,
well?
No. I mean, again, at that point, you can toss olive oil on them if you want, but you don't need them. I mean, I just did them recently with salt, and they were delicious.
Now, the decorative pumpkins that we buy at the supermarket, they don't taste as well as the other, the little ones. Why is that?
That's because, you know, they're kind of semi-domesticated halfway or not even anyway on the road to good eating. They were just primitive forms that were never, you know, brought further or selected or bred for their eating quality. Many of them were used as old as rattles by Native Americans and had other ceremonial uses.
As gourds, in fact.
Exactly.
Now, we received a recipe for an Afghani pumpkin dish that calls for sugar pumpkins. What are those?
Well, these are generally the smaller, round, orange pumpkins of North America. And
those are the ones that most of us call eating pumpkins or cooking pumpkins.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, some of them are really, really good, but never use one of those big orange field pumpkins. They're great for jack-o'-lanterns, but they're just too stringy and coarse.
Bill, will you be making a lot of pumpkin dishes for Thanksgiving?
Oh, we have. We do a monthly soup, and so right now we have a squash soup on the menu. And then that'll be on for Thanksgiving. We also do a squash, carrot, and sweet potato puree or mash together for that. And then we're going to have a pumpkin bread pudding on the menu for dessert.
Are you aware of the way these things are used in other parts of the world? Asian cooking, for
example? Well, that's the one thing I wanted to ask him because I've never had it before. It's like in Japan, you go and is it in Japan that they I know in Japanese restaurants in the U.S., they tempura them, squash. Do they do that actually in Japan?
And they do that in Japan, and there's actually a group of squash called the Japonicas.
Right.
And something like the Futsu squash, quite beautiful. They're small, and they have a lighter yellow flesh, but they're quite nutty, dry, and sweet. So those are, yeah, used in that way.
See, or that's maybe the only thing steamed. I don't like. I don't like it. Squash fried like that. It's the only thing I don't like fried.
But what this tells me is that squash, like some other plants, peppers especially, change wherever you grow them. So you take them to Japan and you wind up with a Japanese variety. You take them to Italy and you wind up with zucchini.
That's right. I mean, these crops, you know, I mean, the Columbian Exchange opened up, you know, new worlds for these crops. And so wherever people, you know, embraced them and selected them and saved them, passed the seed down to the next generation, they adapted to the various cuisines and climates. So we have all this wonderful diversity.
Well, thank you both so much for talking with us on today's Globophores segment. We've been talking about squash. Pumpkins, of course, are on our minds these days because of the holiday coming up, and also because you find them everywhere. But as you point out, Bill, we can get other kinds of squash and use them in pumpkin recipes as well. Yes. Do we just use them exactly the same?
Yes. Yeah. After if it calls for like a pumpkin puree, you would roast off the squash and then use it that way.
Now, just one other thing. I have been assured by many food professionals that a canned pumpkin is just as good as the stuff that I spend so much time preparing before the holiday. What do you think?
Actually, canned pumpkin is not really a pumpkin. It's a lot of it is the delicious orange squash, which belongs in the Hubbard group. They also make baby food out of that.
We have to rush because the president's going to be talking in a moment. What about you? Do you use canned squash?
I have, but not generally, though.
Okay. Well, thank you both so much. Bill Telepan, chef and owner of Telepan Restaurant right near Lincoln Center, a restaurant that specializes in using local ingredients in all of its foods. Amy Goldman, author of The Complete Squash. It's been a lot of fun talking with you on today's Globivores segment.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much.